She was just recently charged in the Philippines. Reuters journalists Walone and Kwa So-o, who are currently imprisoned in Burma for investigating a massacre of Rohingya Muslims. And finally, the Capital Gazette of Annapolis, Maryland, where earlier this year a gunman opened fire, killing four journalists and one other employee. Time is calling the recipients of this year's tribute the Guardians and the War on Truth. That does it for our broadcast, Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura. Special thanks to...
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by New Cascadia Traditional, located at 1700 Southeast 6th Avenue. New Cascadia Traditional is open daily and provides a wide variety of bread with gluten-free options. Lunch was provided by Blackbird Pizza, located at 1935 Southeast Hawthorne Street, and open from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. daily. Blackbird also has a second location in North Portland, located at 6214 North Interstate, which is open till midnight every day. Dinner was provided by Russell Street Barbecue, located at 325 Northeast Russell Street. Russell Street Barbecue is a local woman-owned barbecue restaurant that has been in Northeast Portland for going on 16 years. Last year, they opened a second location at 42nd and Southeast Belmont Street. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hey, good morning. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. We have two very special guests today, and we're going to be talking about, what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about sex, the aging process, the commercial sex industry, and a number of other questions that come up in all of that. With me in studio here is Jan Hawkinson, a retired professor from Portland State.
It's Hawken.
Hawken. Hawken. Sorry.
Take the sun off.
Yeah, right. Okay. And Marion Reese. And I guess I didn't know we were going to do pleasure. I want to confess that on the air. So it's important for you out there to know that we're going to have to take three breaks. And they were probably not going to be able to take phone calls. Now, don't run away from your phone. Hopefully, this will be a fairly interesting show. And it'll also be really dealing with, I think, something that our audience probably needs to think about, all of us need to think about. There's a process in human sexuality in which persons are disconnected from that process in our culture normally or almost always. And that process of disconnection is also a process of dehumanization, which I see as people grow older. And I think that's an important thing to understand. There's the other aspect of this, which is that it is a commercial business, and has grown more and more popular with more and more opportunities for contact outside of the old traditional prostitution. So we're going to be dealing with all of that, and I want everybody to stay listening to us and hopefully be tolerant of my out-of-itness today. And I guess we should start with you, Jan.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll jump in. And I'm delighted to be here today with Marion Reese, author of Love and Lust, Laughter and Lost, The Life of Juliet and Peg Anderson, a wonderful alliterative title. I think captures the many dimensions of this primarily a porn star or a star in pornographic films. And you have a lot of insight into the sex industry because you worked for many years as a sex phone operator.
Phone sex operator.
Okay. Yeah, the devil's in the details.
Yes.
So let's start with the book and what drew you to it. I think it's interesting that you portray Juliet Anderson as, in some ways, a very ordinary person. That itself is a kind of radical act as an author. And indeed, many portraits of women in the sex industry make sexual abuse in childhood central. Here you make her illnesses and hospitalization a central dynamic in her going into this line. We're almost in a way that is very much like the portrait of an artist than often histories of illness that are channeled into art forms. It's kind of a common, almost a trope in casting artists. What drew you to the life and work of Juliet Anderson? Maybe say a little bit about who she is and then what you're trying to say about her life.
Okay. Can I say a little bit about myself first?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I did work as a phone sex operator for 28 years.
Wait, 28 years?
28 years, yes.
Okay.
I know. I think I'm one of the longest working phone sex operators. But I am retired now. Retired about 3 years ago. And I met, in the course of that work, I met other sex workers, and Juliet Anderson was one of them. I lived in the Bay Area for 18 years. That's where I did most of my phone sex work. So I met Juliet through a sex worker support group. And, I'd like to ask, so, yeah, part of what I want to talk about, too, is just the people I've met in this industry and what I've learned and some of the experiences I've had. But Juliet was better than most. I mean, to tell you the truth, a lot of the people who work in the sex industry are not the most emotionally stable people in the world. But there are some exceptions, and Juliet was one of those. Not that she was terribly stable, but she was better than most. She never had any substance abuse problems, which is unusual. And she also managed her money fairly well, although she had financial struggles most of her life. But I'd like to, she was very intelligent and insightful. And I was going to help, she always wanted to write her autobiography. And she never got around to it. And as the last 5 or 6 years of her life, she was really beginning to lose it. She was going into dementia and things, and she died rather suddenly. We're not sure what she died of. She died in her sleep, but she did have, she had Crohn's disease all of her life. And as a friend of mine commented, 71 is pretty old to live with Crohn's disease. So after she died, I felt that I should write her biography, because she had wanted to do it, and I'm a good writer, and so I did. And I got in touch with her family and got all of her journals, and so I, you know, as I wrote the book, I wished I had known her better. I knew her for about 8 years as a casual friend.
Now I just want to let our audience know, you're also a technical writer.
I do that now.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Technical editing.
I think that's an important thing. I think the assumption is often made that people in the industry are not capable of other kinds of things. And I think that may be a stereotype that's inappropriate.
Yeah, and actually, the people I met that I was most impressed with were people who could have done other things, had other job skills and other connections. And so they were a lot of them even college educated and chose to work in the sex industry. So, you know, as bad as, I mean, there is a lot of exploitation in the sex industry, I won't deny that. But there also are a few people who are, you know, have more integrity and more emotional stability that really are doing it voluntarily and have really had something to contribute.
And you admire her skills, and that's mm-hmm. been an area actually that that feminist scholars have taken up around so much of women's work that's devalued or what's considered mm-hmm. dirty work, whether mm-hmm. it's forms of child care, family care, housework, or attending or sexual services. They're forms mm-hmm. of work that are often devalued, marginalized, and the level of skill involved is mm-hmm. is not recognized, and that's why right. in part it can be devalued in a patriarchal society. And I think right. part of what I appreciate about your book, because you don't downplay this woman's troubles, and right. some of which I think may be seen as part of working on the margins in an area that where you're vulnerable to forms of exploitation. But also she was a fighter, and mm-hmm. she brought a kind of grace and passion to her work. Mm-hmm. And that's clearly a theme, a touchstone throughout, is you don't romanticize her, but you do pay respect to her skills. In fact, I enjoyed reading the bio line, the timeline in the back of the book, where she mm-hmm. got an award sometime before her life ended, a lifetime award of achievement in the entertainment industry. I thought, mm-hmm. well, that's cool. You don't see those kinds of awards acknowledged. Yes. And it was right. itself really interesting, that timeline, how you paid respect mm-hmm. to her achievements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she really did. She wanted to bring more class to the porn sex, the porn star industry. And she did produce her own movie, Educating Nina, which introduced Nina Hartley to the sex business.
Who's a well-known mm-hmm. feminist
right.
Sex pornography star.
Yes, right.
Well, one of the issues you take up in the book also, and I was wondering if you could respond to it, is how she speaks to, at various places, or you take up the theme of how you come out to your family. And that this was right. very difficult, because wherever that comes from, there's a lot of shame attached in this country to right. working in the sex industry. How did you think about that part of her life, and how you come out in a line of work that is so tied to shame and what many consider an undignified and unworthy line of work.
Right. Well, one thing about Juliet, she had her public stories and her private stories. You know, her public story about how she told her parents probably wasn't true. But
but it was worth telling, though, whether it's true or not.
Her public story was that she finally told her parents she was working in the foreign film industry. And her she claimed her father already knew, because he had seen her in porn stuff, which probably
well,
is
that's
not
interesting in and of itself. Yeah,
well, that's always yeah. one of the right, concerns,
which is probably not true. Yeah. But and then her mother said, "Well," after the long pause, "Well, as long as you're safe, dear." That was her public story.
What do you suspect was,
well, according to her sister? Yeah, I'm not sure how her parents found out. She told her sister. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she told her sister, and her sister said, "Well, you better not tell our parents." And I'm not sure how their parents found out. She did have a cousin, Pam, who was very supportive of her work when she found out.
So what we're really talking about, I think, is that we have marginalized, both legally and socially, acts of sexual relationships of all sorts, particularly if they have some relationship to earning a living. And this has been a long-term tradition. And I think we're going to want to take a break right away, but I think that this is a very interesting, what would happen, here's a theoretical, what would happen if somehow our culture changed its attitude toward prostitution. And I throw that out as something to think about. And it raises all kinds of issues, particularly the issue of exploitation, which is inevitable in a situation where something is either semi-legal or illegal. So let's take a break, and I think we're going to talk about making money.
Well, good morning. This is Linda Olson-Osterlin. I've been sitting here listening to Joe with his guests, Jan Hawkins and Marianne Reese, and boy, what an interesting conversation. If you're like me and you appreciate tuning in to something like this, it may be unexpected. This is the Abe and Joe talk show, and often they don't have a guest starting out, but lucky us. We've got guests, and they're talking about very interesting information, sex work, being inside that, taking a different look at it. Is it always so just a victim involved in the sex work? Is it somebody choosing it for a reason that makes sense? I think it's really important radio, and I hope you support that. We want to thank Ellen, a renewing member from Portland. She's supporting KBOO this morning. Join her, please. 877-500-5266 is the phone number, and KBOO.fm is the number. Now, if you're already on your computer listening, I often do that at home because I get a little better sound than I do with my radio. So I turn it on first thing in the morning and get to listen via my computer. Well, you know, right there on the homepage, on the upper right-hand corner, it says donate. And that's your cue. You get to just click on that and become a member within about 2 or 3 minutes. You can hear the voices behind me. That's the volunteers in here excited to kick off our holiday fun drive. You know, this is just a 5-day drive. We're trying to jump in there right when you're in the midst of your giving mood and your desire to support important things. And supporting KBOO is supporting important things. You support so many other causes. You get so much information, like you're getting this morning, in person from people engaged in the work that they're talking about. That's pretty important. Take a moment, show your support. I'm suggesting $10 a month. You can get the Democracy Now! T-shirt for that, which is a great one. You can also get a KBOO T-shirt for even less than that. But $10 a month seems about right. Our minimum wage is just $10.25, I think, here, or $11.25 here in the city. That would be a great one also. Take a moment, become a member. I don't think it'll hurt you coming out of your budget if you pick that amount. You may not even notice it comes out the same time every month. It's easy to become a member, but we need you to pick up your phone, and we really do. Show your support for the Abe and Joe Talk Show right now at 877-500-5266.
Yeah, Linda, thanks for jumping in there and picking up with the pitch and the pledge drive. You know, Joe and Abe and so many other guests get in here early and do a lot of prep work to put these shows together to keep Portlanders informed. And this is an opportunity for our listeners to show their appreciation and maybe send a little bit of Yuletide greetings to Joe and Abe in the form of a gift to their favorite public radio station, KBOO. And I'm asking you now to give a call to 877, and I forgot the number. I haven't got the
500-5266.
Again, I'm going to repeat it now that I see it in front of me, 877-500-5266. But again, this is a request for you, our listeners that have not yet become a member, but our regular listeners, to take this opportunity and show their support for the radio station, for KBOO, your community radio station. I know many folks would like to be actively involved, but time constraints, work, family prevent them from doing so. But everyone can make some monthly contribution to their community radio station to keep us vibrant, alive, on the air, and keep you informed, as Ani says, to keep KBOO in your ear. So please take this opportunity, give us a call, 877-500-5266, or if you'd like to, you can go online and go to kboo.fm and click on that donate button. But either way, take this opportunity, show your support. It's a short winter membership drive, and we need your help.
That's right. We really do need your help. And, you know, I know many of you probably tune in to Abe and Joe Talk Show every morning. Every Tuesday morning that it's on. I know that I do. Sometimes I'm tuning in to argue with them. I'm getting all you know, angry at home going, I don't agree with that, Abe, or I don't agree with that, Joe. And I hear you call in and say the same thing. And then there's all those others that call in and praise it because they're so glad for the information. But I figured out that even if it gets me a little angry, oh, that gets me thinking. That got me stirred up. That got me on my political JoJo in the morning. So I think that if you're out there and you're listening to the Abe and Joe Talk Show, you know how important it can be to keeping the conversation going, for keeping you fresh and up to date on what's happening in the world, but also bringing you controversial points of views, bringing you a little bit of argument about it. They like to get in there and tussle over the issue so it can really be meaningful. Please take a moment right now at 877-500-5266 and become a member or go to KBOO.FM. Your dollars really do make a difference, and we need them to come in right now in this short little drive we're doing.
Yeah, really. We do need your support. And I don't think there's anywhere in the airwaves or probably even online where topics like this are being dealt with in a kind of a neutral and perhaps even a challenging way. And I think that it's important to do that. And I think it's important that we do that here at KBOO because nobody else, I got to say this, nobody else is going to be doing it. Any kind of conversation about the sex trade or anything else is commercialized, and the success of any show doing or talking about those things depends on a, I have to say, a kind of sensational approach. What we're trying to do here is demystify the thing and talk about it. We're talking with a psychologist who has had some experience, not in the industry, but in the literature. And we are talking to a person who has had experience as a phone sex worker. And I don't know of anywhere else that would happen. So I just wanted to, I didn't plan to pitch, but I just want to say that that's really important. And you got to remember that you're not going to get that. You are not going to hear that on any regular airwaves anywhere else. So support KBOO and give us a bunch of your money.
So this is Jan Hawken, and I'm delighted to be talking today with Maren Reese. And I'd like to take up one of the themes of your book and how it challenges certain assumptions about women working in the sex industry. For some feminists, histories of child abuse, particularly child sexual abuse, has been kind of a central story in working to bring the humanity and suffering of sex workers into view. But you acknowledge that, but you also challenge some of the assumptions about the life narratives of women in the sex industry. Can you speak to that?
Yes. Well, Juliet actually did have one sexual abuse experience when she was a toddler. Her father was a musician, and he played with one of the big bands, jazz bands, and they traveled around. And one night when they were staying in a hotel, one of the musicians came in and fondled her when she was like 3 years old. She did have that experience. But more than that, her illness, she was hospitalized as a child a number of times. And this was in the 1940s when hospitals were not concerned with people's emotional states, especially children. And she experienced that as abuse, and actually like sexual abuse because it was so physically intrusive. And then,
and you're cut off from often parents didn't stay.
They didn't allow parents.
Terrifying experience for kids.
And isolating, and she would never know when somebody was going to come into her room and do God knows what to her. So it's a terrible experience of being totally out of control of her own body, her own life, and everything. And this had the effect of wanting her, giving her, you know, the desire to be in control. And that is actually what often draws people who were sexually abused into the sex industry, because actually, contrary to popular opinion, when you're a sex worker, I mean, unless, there certainly are situations where sex workers are very exploited and sex trafficking and all that, but someone who chooses voluntarily to get into the sex industry as an adult actually is very much in control, surprisingly. And Juliet mentioned that herself. One of the things she said when she got in, she started as a stripper. Well, she had a short part in the film, and then she became a stripper. But she did say here, I really love getting naked, dancing around, turning men on, and being sexy and uninhibited, and always being in command. That was very important to her.
I think what your project and your own life story is about, acknowledging that sexual power is a form of power.
Yes.
And definitely. It's a form of power that has currency like other forms of power. Mm-hmm. And it's important to recognize it in its own terms, but it also, it often is a very short-lived form of power for women mm-hmm. who sell their capacity to arouse desire. And also makes you vulnerable to losing control. And it seems like part of what a touchstone throughout your book is the importance of forms of support, networks. You've been part mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. support groups, Coyote, other, right. and that some of the legislation, including the recent FOSTA and SESTA laws that are under the guise of protecting women in the sex industry, the law allows states and victims to fight Online Sex Trafficking Act, or FOSTA, out of the a bipartisan effort to protect women who are brought into the sex industry through trafficking. Actually, it's the opposite effect. Makes women more vulnerable, makes it more difficult to organize online and to screen people, potential mm-hmm. clients. Now, you've lived through different eras of laws around the sex industry and look back on that history. Could you say something about what you've seen over time in terms of the repressive laws against women in the sex industry, and also how you've been part of the resistance to it?
The resistance to what?
To the criminalizing of sex work. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the policing of sex work, mm-hmm. and often in the guise of protecting women.
Right, right, yeah. Well, that history goes back a while. Back in the 19th century, we had houses of prostitution, which actually protected women a lot. There were rules about what you could and couldn't do. There was a bouncer to kick somebody out.
And there was the group protection, and yes. there's always protection in the group that you don't have if you're mm-hmm. a isolated streetwalker, for example.
Right, right, yeah, and they were much better. So when those were closed down right around World War One, and actually even earlier, but mostly around World War One, they were closed down.
Actually, I actually wrote a dissertation about the vice scandals of Portland in the 1950s. Right. And one of the things I discovered was that, this is from the police perspective, that when there was corruption, there would be houses of prostitution in Portland. And the sign that there wasn't corruption would be an increase of streetwalkers. Hmm. It's kind of an interesting thing, because the houses had to pay off the police.
Right.
And that I knew was true in other places. New York City is another example of that. And I think that the intersection between the industry, the sex industry, and the official system, is an opportunity for incredible corruption, and is often used and this is a place where there's a tremendous amount of exploitation, not directly about the activities, but about how you can maintain the activities. Mm-hmm. So I think this is really an important part of it, because in essence, this is an example, I believe, prostitution itself is an example of ultimately the exploitation of a working class in a system that really functions to the benefit of a ruling class. And I have to throw that out, because that's how I see it in a very broad sense. Now, obviously, there are sensitivities and there are other kinds of issues, important issues, about the intimate activities that people in the sex industry engage in.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, there's this incredible hypocrisy attached to the demeaning of women, particularly in the sex industry. In commodity culture, sex is used to sell everything. Women's bodies are on billboards all over the place. Mm-hmm. You buy a car, and it's mm-hmm. sex that sells that car. You buy a drink, and yet when it's explicit, there's this element of horror and kind of splitting that off from consciousness, how much sex is generally commodified.
Yeah, and you know that advertising exploits men in a way, because it triggers them, you know? It's like, you know?
Well, are you saying really that Johns are victims in this context?
Well, I think in some ways sex work clients are exploited. I mean, they have to pay. And another interesting thing that I have found as a phone sex operator is that most of the clients, especially the regular, really regular clients, have also been sexually abused as children. People don't realize that. How much boys are sexually abused in this culture. That's an almost invisible group of people. And an even more invisible group is male sex workers. People think they don't even exist, but they do.
And you describe Juliet Anderson as having a brief part of her career. I mean, she did quite an impressive range mm-hmm. of forms of work in the sex industry. Right. But you said at one point that she was not very good at phone sex. You acknowledge there were skills. You also suggested sometimes she was not very ethical, which was a way of saying there are ethical guidelines for this kind of work and there's kind of skills involved. Mm-hmm. What would you say are the important skills involved that aren't perhaps recognized in phone sex work?
Mm. Well, yeah, and I have known a few other phone sex operators. There's actually a woman who came through Portland a few years ago, Cameron Moore, who did a skit about phone sex, and she did a great job. But to be really good at this work and to be in it as long as I was, certainly to be non-judgmental and to be a good actress. And it's really the client.
Good listener, I'm sure.
A good listener. I actually worked on a crisis hotline just before I became I did that for 8 years also. It overlapped with my phone sex work. But it's the caller's call, we would always say. And it's really up to the client. What do they want? Where do they want to go?
How do you figure out what they want?
You listen.
Okay, you want to do a little role play?
I don't know whether I could do that.
Okay.
As a phone sex operator. But,
as a caller comes in, there's an agency that connects calls.
I ended up working as an independent. I started working for a service, but I then became independent. So I had a website. I judge the caller's energy level, and you can tell that within the first few seconds. You know, how fast are they talking? You know, how energized are they?
So
and there's a certain you listen for a certain urgency mm-hmm. or too much of something, and then have to find a way probably to terminate the call.
Well, no, don't you want them to be talking as long as possible?
Well, most of the time. I mean, sometimes.
But you've talked about screening your calls, too.
Well, it's just to see, is this guy going to pay or not? As a phone sex operator, I would sometimes get guys who wanted to try to get me to talk without paying, like, oh, what are your rates? I said, my rates are on my website. If you can't read, I can't help you.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds hard.
So, yeah.
But you're reminding people that this is a business transaction, and there are terms of the encounter,
right,
and that's part of what you're saying that is the control aspect.
Yes, definitely. Right.
It's a contract.
It's a contract. It's a business contract. And that's why the worker is in control.
We're going to have to take another break.
Can we have Marianne invite callers to... Would you invite people to call in and pledge?
Oh, I didn't know that's what you were going to ask.
Well, we didn't know that was going to be a pledge drive, quite honestly. But are you comfortable with that?
Let me think about that.
Okay, we'll think about doing this drive. Yeah. Okay. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Are you there, Joe?
I'm not sure that I'm all here, no.
Okay.
Listen, this is Linda Olson-Osterlund for KBOO Community Radio. It is our holiday fun drive. It's just a very short 5-day drive. You know, and one thing that I've been really aware of is that it's dark outside. It's really dark outside. A lot of you probably leave your home in the morning in the dark, and you come home in the evening in the dark after a hard day's work. Well, I know we're all looking for the light. You know, I mean, all the religions around the world show people looking for the light at this time of it. And it doesn't have to be a religion. We're looking for the light because it's dark outside. And I want to say KBOO is that light for you. We bring you information. We bring you guests that you will not find anywhere else in the Portland area. And that's important. It's important to you and to your ability to understand the issues and know about things going on in your community. But it's important in the context of media overall in the country. Right now, media is, I would say, 85% not independent, and we need our independent voices. And the way independence works is we have to not get commercial dollars. That's right. We turn down commercial dollars. We won't accept commercial dollars. We want your dollars, the listener, the member. So the way to do that is call us right now at 877-500-5266. Volunteers have come in just to answer your calls. It's 877-500-5266. And we've been a little slow this morning, so I'm going to invite you to go big. How about $25 a month? That's a $300 pledge, and we have the greatest KBOO two-sided hoodie. Two-sided means on the front there's our logo, and on the back there's a logo as well. It's really a great hoodie, super warm for this weather, and I think that would be a great amount to pledge. I know there are many of you who can do that. $25 a month is something that you can afford to have coming out of your paycheck every month, and you're going to stay warm and cozy all winter with a KBOO hoodie. So please call us right now, 877-500-5266. Make your day and make KBOO's maintenance bill.
You know, Linda, I kind of think of KBOO as the Bernie Sanders of community radio. We survive on small donors like Bernie and Beto O'Rourke. We depend on the contributions of our members, and it doesn't have to be an enormous amount. Just a regular monthly contribution of $10 a month means so much to this station. So please take this opportunity. Give us a call at 877-500-5266. Make that pledge, become a member. If you're already a member, maybe just a little bit extra for our year-end drive. Help us make sure that we're healthy going into 2019, that we can continue to contribute the kind of radio you're hearing today with Joe and Jan and Marianne. You're not going to hear that discussion anywhere else on the airwaves in Portland. In fact, you're not going to hear it probably in most places, but KBOO is open to the community, open to these kind of discussions, but we need your help to continue doing that. 877-500-5266. I'm going to repeat it once more, just in case you dropped your pencil and it rolled under the couch. 877-500-5266. Or you can get to us online, kboo.fm, and click on that donate button. But whichever way you choose to do it, become a member of the community. Continue to see KBOO contributing to the progressive discussion that you're not going to hear on commercial media, commercial TV, or radio. And it seems to be slipping into the background even in the public broadcasting segment. KBOO is different, it's progressive, it's community, it's your voice, and we need your help to continue getting your voice out into the air.
You know, it's actually you, the member, that has this voice come to you. It's your dollars that help us pay to be able to get this out. We need electricity. We have something like 5 studios here. Right now, we're actually using 3 of them, one back here for membership drive, one for Ray, who's been listening in the air room, and another studio where there is there's Joe and Jan and Marianne. Your dollars make that difference. Your dollars allow people to come in and make music on our music shows. You're so important. We need your money. We're asking you, I'm right now saying, get yourself a super warm and politically great sweatshirt. It's KBOO's two-sided hoodie for just $25 a month. That's $300 a year. You would really help us towards our goal, and we need that money right now. 877-500-5266 or 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Come on down, and we will give you a cup of coffee with your membership receipt.
Yeah, you'll get a cup of coffee, and I think people should give. I don't know.
Well, are you going to give, Joe?
What am I?
Give to KBOO?
Give to KBOO?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Could I count on you for a pledge of $500?
$500? $500? Well, no.
Well, how much would you
How much
earn?
Pleasure do you yes, get out of right. this show week yes. after week? Come on.
You know, you mean what's my ego support here and what's it worth?
So, well, I'll tell you what, we can give you a bargain.
A bargain?
About $400, yes.
This is scary. This is getting very scary.
If you do some volunteer work, we'll give you a bargain.
This is getting more and more frightening. I think I should hang up. but the point we were... But you sound very different than you sound when you're just talking.
Really?
Ordinarily.
Really? Yeah.
How does that change take place?
I don't know. Depends on what I'm doing, I suppose.
Well, yeah. Here's a real question. Do you get into the role when you're talking on the telephone? Mm-hmm. So it's like theater, kind of?
Oh, it is. I mean, it's actually a lot like radio drama, because it's all about sound and imagination. I've always loved radio.
And I think that is a theme in erotic films or pornographic film is the talk show and people calling in and telling their stories to someone on the radio and where the voice is central to the story. Mm. What do you think? And that hasn't been as recognized as visual cues.
Well, human beings, like all primates, are primarily visual. We are.
Then there may be some senses like smell and sound that are undervalued. Like in film, as a filmmaker, I can tell you people are very responsive to what you do with audio, but they're not as conscious of it as they are of the visual. But it's a very important and often unrecognized part of the success of a film. Mm-hmm. What have you learned about perhaps the psychology of men? You were talking earlier about assumptions about the psychology of women in the industry, but what about the psychology of men who seek these services? And I think you see Juliet Anderson's and your own work sometimes in a therapeutic way.
Yeah,
it has
definitely.
It has some elements of counseling. You mentioned your background in crisis counseling.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think about that part of the work?
I think it's a really important part of it. It's the best of the sex business. It can be therapeutic. And
so you have a very calm voice, and there's something perhaps reassuring that you try to convey?
Yeah, men who use pornography, or the sex industry in general, have often said that they do it because they feel totally accept. They feel that the woman accepts their sexuality, whereas out in the social world, they often feel that women are rejecting their sexuality. And you know, I mean, we are somewhat incompatible, male and female, sexually. Although we tend to come together more as we get older. Men get a little more interested in the emotional side of it, and women often, when they're older, in this culture anyway, are more able to take on more of the just physical. They've already done their relationship stuff, or they haven't, you know.
So you've also addressed aging in the sex industry, it is a fact that Juliet Anderson was somewhat exceptional in how long she could continue to be a porn star, right?
And so she started at age 40.
Uh-huh.
She did for 7 or 8 years.
Which is itself remarkable. So it's not as though there aren't age stereotypes attached to this work, but you've also emphasized the erotic aspects of men who seek older women. Can you speak to...
Well, it's often because they were sexually abused by an older woman.
So there is, it's looking for something, returning to a place that has been...
It's trying to get control of the situation.
Sexualized.
It's the same thing as it is for women to get into the sex industry. You know, it's when you're having a fantasy, you're in control of the fantasy. Even if the fantasy is about you being degraded, it's, you know, submissives, people who want to be degraded in sex are they're very passive-aggressive. They're very controlling. You know, you've got to do exactly what they want and exactly the right timing, the right tone of voice and everything. So,
which is part of how psychologists describe fetishes. There's the apparatus is very important, and the ritual of it and the order of it in terms of feeling a sense of control. But you have a certain respect for that as part of human psychological experience.
What do you mean?
That people bring pain. There is very little disgust in the tone of your writing that you seemed in through her life, express a kind of openness or recognition that people bring a lot of troubles and painful experiences into adulthood, and I think many people find these acting out of roles as a very shameful or disgusting thing. But you're saying people bring into these fantasies or role plays difficult experiences in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a way of working out. I mean, I have a young man I still talk to. We don't do sex calls anymore, but he was one of my clients. And I have encouraged him to try to find therapy and everything. But he said that the talking we did has really helped him in his healing from his sexual abuse.
Are you making an argument that phone sex not only can be but often is therapeutic?
Yes. Yeah, and that touches to sex work too. And Juliet did that also in her sex work.
She became a hypnotherapist.
Yeah, she did that and became, and she was a massage therapist who did erotic massage. That's how she spent the last years of her life. And she was very good at that.
Okay, well, we're gonna take a break right now, and I guess I'll join pledging with her. So this mic will be alive.
Yay. All right. Hi, Joe. This is Linda, and I've got Ani with me here, too, so we've got you.
No, you got me. I don't know if that's an advantage or disadvantage at this point.
I think it's always an advantage to have you, Joe. Why do you think people should become members?
Oh, well, I think it's pretty obvious, but first of all, if you're listening to this show, if you're listening in general to KBOO, whether you're listening to the incredible music programs, which really, and when I say incredible, I really mean it, variety, depth, very significant, and very educational as well as very delightful, or whether you're just listening to things, I should say just, if you're listening to things like this show or any of the public affairs programming here, you realize that what we're doing is not just cutting edge, but challenging to the established order, even in comparison, and I'm going to say this, even in comparison to public broadcasting. We'll go further. We'll challenge more. We'll be willing to take on the establishment in very real ways, real concrete ways. And it's not just because we're talking about politics. It's because we're talking about culture as well. And then the depth of the American capitalist culture is incredibly invasive and incredibly powerful. And what we're doing, what we're really doing here at Cable, is standing up to that. And it's difficult. It's not easy. All of us have demands in our lives. All of us have a bunch of commitments that we need to make. And all of us probably, just guessing, are not really super wealthy. But it's really important that you realize that without this station, in this market, in this place, there will be much less discourse about a lot of things. This show, I did not remember that we were going to have a pledge drive. It's a little embarrassing. Will you forgive me?
Yes, we forgive you.
Okay. I needed forgiveness.
We all forgive, but this is that moment that people can call 877-500-5266 and show their appreciation for what you do each and every week, Joe. And it's an important action for all of your listeners to take right now, because we have goals and we'd like to meet them. And mostly what we want to do is make sure that the community is stepping forward to provide stable funding for this community resource. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
And you know, I'm asking people to go big.
Go big.
Yeah, they've been listening intently to this really interesting conversation about sex and sex industry, and really a conversation I don't think that we get to hear on mainstream media almost at all. They would have to have titillated it and shown lots of pictures of, you know, titillating things to make it be mainstream. But we're not mainstream. We wanted to dig into the real issues of it, understand what it means to be a sex worker and be in the sex industry when it's something that you've chosen. You're getting that on KBOO.fm. That's right. You're getting it on KBOO, your community radio, 90.7. We need you to support that radio right now. I'm saying go big, $500. call in with $500.
Hey, that
would, that's
a great
idea.
Someone
out there who can do that.
Yeah, there probably is someone, and maybe they will do it. And I want to remind people, whether it's $5 or $5 million, what the hell? 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Make that call now, and then we can continue our conversation in comfort and luxury.
Our luxurious studio.
As we all know, the golden toilets and so on here at the station.
You know, it's a palatial. That's right, the Palace of Pledge. And it is built by you. It is built with your support from the community. Please do give us a call, 877-500-5266. Yeah, $500.
Doesn't that
exciting? Can you kick that in? It would be fantastic to hear from you this morning. It is good to hear from you no matter what you can contribute this morning, because it is, in fact, each and every person doing what they can that upholds this community resource, that upholds KABU. Please count yourself in the mix, 877-500-5266. Or online at kboo.fm. You can also come in to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, just between Burnside and Ankeny on Southeast 8th Avenue, and you can see exactly the radio station that your dollars build. You can meet the folks that make the radio from this side of the microphone, and you know that you are one of the folks that make the radio happen from your side of the microphone. So connect with your community radio station this morning. Be a member of KABU right now, and support Talk Radio with Joe this morning. Again, this is a subject that is not covered from this perspective anywhere else that I have heard in the local area. So please call us right now. Support intelligent conversation. Support your access to information. 877-500-5266 is the number to call when you decide to make a difference. Let that time be right now. Make a difference with your entire community today. Call us and join KABU. 877-500-5266. Or online
at kboo.fm. You know, $500 I'm calling out. For $300 of that, $25 a month, you can get our KABU hoodie. But I'm suggesting $500. I just know one of you's out there. Maybe two or three of you are out there who can do that. Please take the moment right now. 877-500-5266. Or go to kboo.fm and click that red button that says donate.
That's right. Your contributions make all the difference in the world, and you hear the radio differently once you join. It's true. If you haven't joined yet, go ahead, give it a try. You can, don't take my word for it, make an experiment. 877-500-5266. We've got one phone line left open, and I would love to answer that call. 877-500-5266.
Count your blessings instead of sheep. And you'll fall asleep. Don't fall asleep. Don't buy a big screen TV. Don't buy a new car. Don't buy something useless. Don't waste your money on consumer goods. Spend a little bit of it, a reasonable amount of it, here on KBOO. This is me, and I'm saying, come on. You know, this place doesn't exist on anyone, anything but you. It's really about you. It's really about your commitment. It's really about our effort to create a real community of community radio supporters. So call now, 877-500-5266. Well, we're back.
Yeah, and before the break, we talked about the therapeutic aspect of sex work, and you were particularly interested in this aspect of the work in general and the work of Juliet Anderson, whose book you beautifully biographize is that a word? The biography of her life, Love and Lust, Laughter and Loss, and the title itself expresses the range and complexity that you you bring to her life and work. And before we'll be talking about how to get the book in a bit, but what would you like to say about this theme of the therapeutic aspect of sex work? Because I think sometimes there could be this, I think, reasonable criticism of who has access to this service, who has, and are men more apt to feel they have claims on women to be maternal or gratifying without giving much in return other than cash? The line is that... is the context of the work, is the context of the work limit that claim? So how would you argue for it, given many feminists who would say, you know, yeah, women have spent a lot of their lives making men feel good, but that's a ultimately a pointless dead-end street.
Well, it's gratifying in doing therapeutic work. I mean, people who do it hopefully because they enjoy doing it.
I've had some part of my career has been as a therapist, and but a good therapist also will challenge people and find a way for people to face things that they don't want to think about themselves. And if you're just a gratifying mirror, that's not very helpful. It doesn't help you grow as a person. Right. So
talk about this actually young man that I still talk with who lives in a small town in the Midwest. But he started calling me, and he had a fantasy about being seduced by an older woman. I knew right away it was his mother, but it took him several months to admit that. But the time I started talking to him, his life was pretty much of a mess. You know, he was working at low-wage jobs and tended to get involved with women who used him and threw him away. And through talking with me over the years, and it's been, I don't know, 8 or 10 years now.
We've talked.
Yeah. He admitted that it was his mother, and he started working on, you know, he went back to college, finished his degree, and got a good middle-class job. And he's got involved with a woman he's been living with for about 6 years now.
So you feel comfortable that you are, in fact, his therapist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've encouraged him to try to get some therapy. He says, well, it's just not those resources in this small town that I live in. So that's what, but it's helped, you know, his life is clearly better from talking with me. Because I listened and I just participated in the fantasies, and that was helpful. Just because I accept these people. You know, accept their,
and that can be part of a destructive psychological dynamic where people act out something in a shameful way and then want to push it aside or don't acknowledge that it's something serious as a part of them. And so you're in a way you're saying this is a part of who you are.
Yeah.
It's a part of your life. Let's enter into it.
Right, and
see
where this still
goes.
You know, he'll call me when he's had a difficult encounter with his mother, whom he tries to avoid, but she's still very abusive towards him. And we talked about that. That's, you know, it's never going to, it's always going to be with him to some degree, and he knows that. But he can deal with it now. So,
one of my favorite parts of the book was chapter 22, A Gathering of Whores.
Yes,
and
right.
I think.
Wait, A Gathering of Whores?
Yeah, and it's about the
International Conference on Prostitution in 1997.
And I think that the end of the book was one of the few places you seem to be annoyed and irritated periodically by feminists and their what you see as puritanical, self righteous rants. But at the end, you do give a certain credit to women's studies and feminist studies that there's always been a scholarship of sex work. But I think that the second wave feminism of the 70s brought you sex work as a form of labor that it was taken seriously. There have been debates about it, lively debates about it, and still are. But I think the women's movement, particularly second wave feminism, really brought the dignity and complexity of sex work into academia as well as popular culture in a way that had never been the case before.
I want to break in to ask you to tell us how people might want to buy this book, where they can go.
Yeah, I did self-publish it, and it is available on Amazon, as much as I dislike giving money to billionaires, but it's also but it's available in bookstores. Powell's doesn't have it on their shelf, but they have it in their warehouse, so you can order it through bookstores.
And the title is
Love and Lust, Laughter and Loss: The Life of Juliet Aunt Peg Anderson. Love and Lust is how she would sign her fan letters when fans wrote to her, and she'd write back. She'd say Love and
she
Lust.
She has fans.
She did, yeah. Well, and she still does. Some of them are still around.
Shows you what I know.
Yeah. And it covers an incredible history, too. I mean, you have lived a history that you bring to this story of this interesting woman's life.
Yeah, and
the
I did
different,
have
what you call the golden era, or what sometimes called the golden era of pornography.
That wasn't my term. It was called the golden age.
But you kind of unpack that term.
The golden era of pornography. I'm not going to go anywhere with that.
Well, the history of the sex industry is part of your project here,
yes,
too.
Yes, right. Yeah, I did, and I had to do some research on that. Yeah,
well, fascinating.
Yeah. You know, we're running out of time, and I. There was some stuff that we didn't get to cover, which is some of this legal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, duh. So now I was thinking about, you know, the thing that you brought up to me, the fact that there's now legal restraints being put on the industry, on the web, actually, whereas Senator Wyden and others had opened the web up and very carefully made it available to sometimes not very nice people. Mm-hmm. And yet now there's an effort to close it based on the specifics of the sex industry. And we're not going to have time to really talk about that. Yeah. We're just about out of time. But I think that's something for another show, another time.
Yeah, and it has made it much more difficult for sex workers to engage in online screening.
I want to close with this. Please make a large as you can, contribution to KBOO. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Thank you both. I really appreciated this. I think it's been a more interesting show than I intended.
This ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by New Cascadia Traditional, located at 1700 Southeast 6th Avenue. New Cascadia Traditional is open daily and provides a wide variety of bread with gluten-free options. Lunch was provided by Blackbird Pizza, located at 1935 Southeast Hawthorne Street, and open from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. daily. Blackbird also has a second location in North Portland, located at 6214 North Interstate, which is open till midnight every day. Dinner was provided by Russell Street Barbecue, located at 325 Northeast Russell Street. Russell Street Barbecue is a local woman-owned barbecue restaurant that has been in Northeast Portland for going on 16 years. Last year, they opened a second location at 42nd and Southeast Belmont Street. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, lawyer and activist Arjun Singh Sethi looks at the current politics of hate and how extremist groups are using technology to spread vitriol.
Thursday, December 13th, KBOO hosts a special day of programming, Dare to End the War on Drugs. Portland City Commissioner-elect Joanne Hardesty will return as host of Voices from the Edge on this special day of programming, discussing the over-policing of our black and brown communities, and much more. Later that day, join KBOO at Green Hop as we consider where consumers buy marijuana and the value of supporting black and brown-owned businesses.